Let's continue now on The Globalist with today's newspapers. In the studio is a journalist and broadcaster, Lewis Fawne-Jones. Welcome
Morning.
Back, Lewis.
Thank
How
you.
Are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Better than Prince Andrew.
Yes. Yeah, there's only one place to start, I'm afraid. Front pages of all the papers here in the UK. I'm going to choose the Daily Telegraph, just because two interesting facts, really, that they've pulled out. I mean, Duke departs from public life is obviously the big headline. He said he will stand back from his roles. That's in his letter, his version. The Daily Telegraph quote a source saying, basically, that's not true. He was sacked by the Queen.
Exactly. I quite like, and I am never one to advocate going to the Daily Mail's website, but this one you had to see because of the nature of the subject matter. Queen sacks Andrew. I mean, it is as brutal as that, isn't it?
Yeah.
According to the report.
And the reports are obviously, you know, for a long time that he is the favourite son. And so basically, she summoned his favourite son to Buckingham Palace and then sacked him, which kind of reveals the absurdity of this whole kind of system when you really think about it. But the other kind of more substantial point that the Daily Telegraph pulls out and lots of others do is that there's this belief, and I'll just quote it directly, Buckingham Palace is understood to be braced for US authorities to issue the Duke with a subpoena requesting he gives testimony under oath over his friendship with Epstein. And I think that's, you know, going forward, that's the more interesting and more substantial line. If they are bracing for that, it could be obviously hugely important and significant for that investigation. And obviously, much more importantly, focuses again back on the original point of all this, which is the alleged victims of Jeffrey Epstein and their right to due process and a proper investigation. And it does feel like that is getting a bit closer with regards to Prince Andrew's alleged involvement.
Astonishing to think that an interview on a television programme in the United Kingdom could have such explosive consequences.
Exactly.
Let's move to the New York Times. Issues between documents show Iran's infiltration of Iraq.
Yeah, I think this is really, really important. It's something we've probably kind of known for a while, well, a good many years actually, but this is kind of really explosive, concrete evidence. Basically, a load of leaked diplomatic cables from, this is back from 2014, 2015, secured by a website given to the New York Times. And they basically show, and I'll quote, the unprecedented leak exposes Tehran's vast influence in Iraq. Work by Iranian spies to co-opt the country's leaders, pay Iraqi agents working for the Americans to actually switch sides. So we know, obviously, Iran is hugely involved in Iraq. And we kind of now see it laid bare in these documents. Things like, we know, for example, no top Iraqi politician can become prime minister without Iran's blessing. We kind of know that. These documents kind of cement it. But it's much more widespread than just the top politicians. Interestingly, talks about, obviously, the invasion of Iraq. It goes back that far, where the US came in, and basically these cables lay bare that was the invasion was the greatest gift to Iran in the region, because it didn't secure US Western influence in Iraq. It did the opposite. It secured Iranian help.
And this will infuriate Washington.
Well, this was, I mean, it will embarrass...
Or one person in Washington.
Yeah, well, I mean, it will embarrass Washington because it exposes yet again the absolute lack of post-invasion planning. There was no planning, and what it meant was that people in Iraq who had been fighting against Saddam Hussein, who had affinity because of religious reasons and geography with Iran, were supported by Iran during that time. And that influence has grown and grown and grown over the years. And they now even recruit former informants to the CIA, who were deserted by America when America pulled out, and they're now exposed. If you think about it, they're in Iraq saying, well, I'm in real trouble here. The Americans have gone, I've got all this information about how the CIA works. Who am I going to turn to? Well, Iran now wants to pay me for my information. I'm going to turn to Iran.
OK, let's move on to the Financial Times. We have mentioned it before, but let's have a look at the coverage of the astonishing testimony given by Ambassador Gordon Sondland.
It
just says envoy turns on president. That's all you really need to know, doesn't it?
This is like the Prince Andrew story. We know it, but it's just impossible to ignore it. This is one of those true moments. that you have to sit back and think. We know the details, obviously. Gordon Sondland has said, yes, that basically there was a quid pro quo. Yes, he was taking his direction from Trump himself. And yes, other people knew about it. And yes, he was working with Rudy Giuliani. So all these things that we have been reported on and have been conjecture has now come from one man in front of these impeachment hearings. But just take a step back a second, because there's always so much coverage of Donald Trump and so much coverage of controversy. So we have to remember, this doesn't happen in US politics. Impeachment inquiries, impeachment testimonies are so incredibly rare that you have to kind of take a step back and recognize that, yes, we see it on the front pages all the time, but this is an absolutely monumental, historic moment. Wherever it goes from here, presidents are just not investigated and treated this way.
We have got rather used to it, though, haven't we?
Yeah, that's the kind of frightening thing. And that's why I wanted, you know, you've got to mark when these formal moments happen, even though we think we've heard it all before and we think we know all the accusations, when someone actually sits down and testifies at an impeachment testimony, that is something different altogether.
The difficulty, though, is that we've heard a little bit earlier on this programme from Lewis Lukens that the likelihood of the Republicans actually letting this have any influence on their decision-making is very, very low. It's difficult,
yes,
isn't it? Finally, let us move on to an article in The Guardian that says trauma victims become the first humans to be placed in suspended animation. They have a picture of Alien.
Yeah. This is
where Sigourney Weaver's placed in a pod.
Exactly, the film. And if you're kind of roughly my age, our age, yeah, let us go. We grew up with this film, and it's just this idea of kind of basically humans hibernating. So if you want to do big space travel, you're put into suspended animation, everything is slowed down, frozen essentially, and stopped, and then you can be woken up later. Well, this isn't about sending humans into space. It's actually about saving lives. So if you're a trauma victim, you've been shot or stabbed or something, the surgeons have minutes to try and save your life, just minutes, if it's bleeding or whatever it is. So what they actually need is somewhere to give themselves a bit more time. And what they've discovered in pigs, and now they've just started doing in humans, is basically in replacing your blood with a kind of cold fluid that slows down and cools down your brain, crucially, down to like below 10 degrees C. So they're basically replacing the patient's blood with this cold stuff. That then kind of suspended animation, like kind of Alien, like sci-fi stuff, that gives them the extra minutes to go in and do whatever they need to do to try and save the patient's life. And then they can warm the patient back up and kind of bring them back to life.
I want to know who's the person who said, OK, pigs, we've seen it work on you. Yeah. I'll try it on me, I don't mind.
Well, the resurgence is out of the United States. It was a bit blasé about it. It was like, well, we've done it in pigs. And I just thought it was time we should try it in people. And the results, I should say, are not massively conclusive yet. It's very, very early stages. But as in terms of pushing the frontiers of science, if not yet sci-fi, it's pretty extraordinary.
Yes, I know. It's quite funny that you don't actually have one case study of a person coming around saying, yep, happened to me and I'm okay. Anyway, let's try anything. Lewis Vaughan-Jones, thank you very much indeed for joining us on The Globalist.
UBS is a global financial services firm with over 150 years of heritage. Built on the unique dedication of our people, we bring fresh thinking and perspective to our work. We know that it takes a marriage of intelligence and heart to create lasting value for our clients. It's about having the right ideas, of course, but also about having one of the most accomplished systems and an unrivaled network of global experts. That's why at UBS, we pride ourselves on thinking smarter to make a real difference. Tune in to The Bulletin with UBS every week for the latest insights and opinions from UBS all around the world.
You're with The Globalist. Let's talk business now with the financial analyst Louise Cooper. Louise, welcome back to the programme. Good to know that you're there to tell us about what's happening with Google.
Yes, so this is quite a significant announcement, really. Google is going to stop giving advertisers the ability, this is political advertisers, the ability to micro-target individuals in an election. So this whole thing came out after the Brexit vote, after Trump won the election, and it's all about micro-targeting. So companies like Google and Facebook know huge amounts of information about us. Our age, our general, our gender, our postcode, what sort of things we search for, or with Facebook, what things we like. And that's given the companies like Google or Facebook or Twitter huge power over us. And then they sell that information to political advertisers. And in many cases, this has been questioned and wondered whether this is a threat to democracy. Now, on Twitter on October the 30th announced significant reduction to political adverts that they would take. That actually, the new rules start tomorrow. And Google is going to do the same thing, going to give political advertisers far, far less information to stop them micro-targeting people. And this is ahead of the UK election, which clearly is only in a few weeks' time, and the US presidential election in 2020. What is interesting is this now leaves Facebook slightly out in the cold. Facebook has made an awful lot of money from this micro-targeting, particularly from political adverts, and next year would have been huge with the US presidential election.
So if you and I are logging on onto the internet, how will this change actually be evident in the way that we, in what we see?
Well, probably if you go onto Facebook, not very much, because they haven't joined in the party. In terms of Google, it means that there'll be far less targeted adverts to us. So, you know, if you, I don't know, Google search something and then, they sort of say, oh, you've Google searched that, you're right wing, you're left wing, whatever. These are your pressure points. Let's send you a targeted ad for that pressure point. So that will no longer happen. There'll be significant restrictions on political advertisers' ability to target you. Not Facebook, though. So I'm afraid Facebook has not joined in yet.
Right, let's move on to Ryanair. Its baggage fee policy has been ruled as excessive by a Spanish court, but it's not going to pay any attention to it. Is that right?
Yeah, I love this. So a passenger brought, I don't know if you've been on a Ryanair flight recently, but literally you can take a minute handbag, one of these fashionable tiny handbags on the flight, and that's about it. If you want to take something slightly larger, you have to pay for the privilege. And that one lady, I think it was one passenger, did have the audacity to bring on a slightly larger than tiny bag onto the plane without paying for it, and she was given a 20 euro fine. She took it to court. He or she took it to court. I quite like that, the thing. And the Spanish court said, no, they shouldn't have done it. And actually, there's no problems. And Ryanair should refund the fine with interest. But I love Ryanair because despite the court saying you need to remove this from your terms and conditions, Ryanair said, no, we're not going to change our policy. The ruling will not affect Ryanair's baggage policy, either in the past or in the future. It's an isolated case that misinterpreted our commercial freedom to determine the size of our cabin baggage.
Now,
pay for your cabin baggage.
Now that sounds like Ryanair beat the rule of law there. How does that work then, Louise?
Well, I'm not a legal expert, so I'm not a lawyer, but I would imagine it's not happened anywhere else in the world, so we wait to see if it has appealed.
Right, and finally, let's move on to greenwashing. There's, I think EasyJet has decided it wants to be a zero carbon airline. That's got my head scratched. Everyone else wants to have their say too, don't they?
Yeah, so an extraordinary announcement. What's today? Thursday. On Tuesday, by EasyJet, that it wants to be a net carbon zero airline, and it's going to do it through carbon offsetting, despite the fact carbon offsetting is largely disproven as a way to actually reduce the carbon emitted into the air. But if you look at the EasyJet statement, it was all about electric flying, which is kind of weird all by itself. And I looked at some of the news stories today, and you've got a whole load of them all trying to, you know, say, actually, no, we're green. So Primark, which is a big fast fashion chain in the UK, which literally sells T-shirts for £3 or £4. And I think actually Primark's really cheap fast fashion has even been mentioned in a House of Commons Select Committee when, you know, how can the environmental costs of a £4 T-shirt clearly not be priced into a £4 T-shirt? Anyway, the boss of Primark, who's been very, very slow, by the way, Primark very, very slow to embrace the online shopping culture, said actually, you know, shopping on the high street is better for the planet than buying online. Not necessarily true. It completely depends on how you shop and where, you know, whether you walk to the shops, etc., etc. But it's interesting. We're starting to get this. We've got the Dubai-based Emirates airline boss. He did an interview with the BBC saying he was a climate change unbeliever, a climate change denier. Now he's a believer in how the aviation industry needs to get to grips with climate change. Although bear in mind, Emirates does burn through 100 million barrels of oil per year. So again, take that somewhat with a pinch of salt. And we've even got pop bands getting involved. Coldplay, the band Coldplay, apparently they're not going to tour anymore until their concerts are environmentally not just, you know, neutral, beneficial. By the way, his last big tour in 2016 and 2017 had 122 shows over four continents. Just imagine what his carbon footprint, that's the word, carbon footprint would be to 122 shows in four continents. But yeah, everyone's getting on the thing. EasyJet, Emirates Airline, Coldplay, and even Primark.
Thank you, Louise. That was Louise Cooper on Monocle 24. Finally today, nominations for the 62nd Grammy Awards have just been announced. The Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco and Daniel Bache went through the list.
We have the Grammy nominations for 2020, the awards ceremony taking place in January in Los Angeles. Fernando, what are the trends that stick out to you, first of all?
Well, first of all, is the age of the nominees. I mean, they are very young. I mean, if you look at the three top nominees, you have Lizzo, who became a big star in the US this year, many singles in the charts. We have Billie Eilish, she's only 17. She topped the charts with Bad Guy. And she's quite an interesting kind of pop character. Her song is definitely not what you used to hear on the radio. It can be quite dark, actually, at times. And then you have Lil Nas X, again, only 20. He managed to do kind of a country rap song, which caused some controversy at the beginning. But then Billy Ray Cyrus did a remix with him, and the song was number one for 19 weeks. So I'm kind of glad that the Grammys, they're not as stuffy as they used to be. So they opened up a little bit for kind of those younger artists as well.
That's really interesting. And looking at those nominees for Record of the Year, you've got some big hitters there. Ariana Grande, Bon Iver, Billie Eilish, you mentioned. And that Old Town Road and that Lil Nas X song we have talked a lot about here on Monocle 24. What about the other big awards, Fernando? Album of the Year, Song of the Year, Best New Artist. What stands out for you there?
Well, it's interesting if we look at the new artist list. Of course, we have, you know, artists that are generally not that well known. Like Black Puma, but look at the other nominees, Billie Eilish, Lizzo, Lil Nas X, they're all in the main competition. So I think this is the year of the new, perhaps is the beginning of a new era. Maybe I'm exaggerating here a little bit, but it's true. The Grammys were well known for giving prizes for, you know, musicians that were a bit older, you know, like Bob Dylan, Beck. They were quite traditional in a way, the Grammy voter, but I think they decided to change in a similar way that is happening to the Oscars. So if you look at the new artist list, actually that's for me, that's the most telling category here, and it's difficult to predict winners as well, as you say, because there were so many hits. I think the Grammy Academy, Lizzo will do very well this year, perhaps not for Album of the Year, but maybe Song or Record of the Year. But as you say, Daniel, I mean, because I think you've listened to quite a few of the artists on the Album of the Year, very hard. Perhaps Lana Del Rey as well. She hasn't been that nominated in the past, but this year it's been a very good year for her as well.
Yeah, huge fan of Lana Del Rey. I've been playing that record a lot. Billie Eilish is on there, the new Bon Iver record, and Vampire Weekend, fantastic one, that's on there as well. I'm so curious as to if we know any of the performers, what are they going to do for the stage show? Because if you said, Fernando, they want to draw in a younger audience, will they change something in the setup for that?
Well, for example, they're keeping the host from last year, Alicia Keys. She did quite a good job. I mean, she wasn't funny, I have to say, but she was kind of sweet. She sang and she has a beautiful voice, of course. But I have a tip to give to the Grammy producers, if they're listening to this. I think they should try to kind of give more freedom to the artists to do their performance. I remember there's been quite a lot of confusion with artists like Ariana Grande. She had a show in mind, but then the Grammy said, oh, you should do this. So she canceled her appearance on the show. So I think the more freedom they give to the artist, I think the better will be the performance. And they should stop kind of putting artists together for those long tributes. People, they just don't care. One or two tributes in the night, it's okay, but not everything should be a tribute. I think they should be a little bit more modern and exciting, like the list of nominees.
If we look at those list of nominees and the big awards, any predictions you have, Fernando? Anyone that could sweep the show that will be the big winner this year?
God, it's very hard. For Album of the Year, I would perhaps put my money on Lana Del Rey, but I think Lizzo is very, very close, I have to say. Record of the Year, again, will be between Lizzo and Billie Eilish. I mean, Bad Guy, I have to say, it is such a fantastic song, amazing beats, and it's something different. And I think that's what a song should bring. You know, I hate when you listen to a song and say, oh my God, 10 artists are doing the same. I think that is generally a little bit different.
Fernando, thank you for this. I'm just happy that I recognize some people on the list. So that's good news.
Duh. And that was Billie Eilish. And before that, Fernando Augusto Pacheco and Daniel Bates going through the Grammys list. That's all we have time for today's programme. Many thanks to our producers, Marcus Hippie and Daniel Bates, our researchers, Sam Johannes, Nick Toomey and Giacomo Harper, and our studio manager, Kenya Scarlett, with editing assistance from Miles Blumsom. After the headlines, more music on the way. The Briefing is live at midday in London, and The Globalist is back at the same time tomorrow, 7 a.m. London time. Join me for that if you can. For now, from me, Emma Nelson, goodbye. Thank you very much for listening.